Since AIDS was identified 30 years ago, the United States has played a leading role in achieving scientific progress and in translating science into programs. 10 years ago, the U.S. Congress passed a legislation that established an historic and transforming global health program. It is known as PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Since 2004, PEPFAR has committed more than $30 billion to funding for AIDS epidemics across the globe. It represents the largest financial commitment by a single country to responding to HIV and AIDS worldwide, and it has been described as the largest and most successful bilateral HIV/AIDS program ever. Much of that funding has gone to sub-Saharan Africa, and in particular to South Africa, the country with the highest number of people infected with HIV in the world. The news this year that PEPFAR funding to South Africa is decreasing and will no longer go directly to field operators but will be injected directly into the national healthcare system was received with shock by thousands of patients, NGOs and other caregivers that operate in the sector. The South African government assures that there will be no interruption of treatment and care services. But many NGOs and missionaries who operate on the ground and who for years have borne the weight of caring for destitute people and their families who are infected or affected by HIV/AIDS are suddenly faced with the urgent need to find funds elsewhere or see entire communities sink back into despair. One such person is Benedictine monk Gerard Lagleder, whom I met here at Vatican Radio as he stopped off in Rome during a fundraising tour of Europe.
Known as Father Gerard, I'm a missionary Benedictine father of the missionary congregation of St. Ottilien in Bavaria, and I was sent to South Africa 26 years ago as a missionary. And in South Africa for the first 3 years from 87 to 90, I was in a small little, you may call it a bush parish, where the parish priest and I, the assistant priest, were the only two whites in the whole magisterial district. And there I came to learn the Zulu language and, of course, the culture and the thinking and the religious ideas of the people. And then in 1990, I was sent by the bishop and by my abbot to become the parish priest in a community called Mandeni. And Mandeni is halfway between Durban and Richards Bay, the two largest harbors of Africa. And this is where I was sent as a parish priest.
You actually run a very important project.
The name of the project, the name of the organization, which runs the project is the Brotherhood of Blessed Gerard. And Blessed Gerard was the founder of the Order of Malta, who 900 years ago in Jerusalem founded the oldest hospital of the order. And we are the South African branch or relief organization of this order, which I founded there 21 years ago. The whole thing was, when I was a parish priest there, I was sent into a community where there, in the catchment area of Mandeni, there live around about 250,000 people, and most of them in a big township and in slums outside that township. And as a parish priest, I was sent out there, and I did sick visits, and there were patients who nobody cared for. And then we as the church said we must do something to help those people. There was one case, if I may tell you that. I was called to bring Holy Communion to a dying lady, and I went out into the bush. I had seen her every month before, and this time she was really bad. And I asked her, what's wrong with you? My back is so sore. And I thought, that's not a reason to die. And I told her, look, I'm not just a priest, I'm also a nurse, can I have a look at your back? And she allowed me. And her whole back was one big bed, so you could even see the bones in there. And there were maggots in those wounds. And she was in an absolute terrible state. And I said, come on, you must see a good doctor. I can't afford that. And I said, let that be my worry. And I took her along on my bakkie, as we call it in South Africa, a pickup. And I brought her to a good doctor, which was the pastoral council chairman of our township community of Sundumbili. He sent her to hospital, and in the same night she died. And then The doctor actually came to me and said, Father, can't we do something? There are so many people dying from neglect that we institute some kind of a home or something to look after those destitute people. And of course, he opened open doors by asking me that question, because I had been involved with the Order of Malta in Germany for quite some time, since 1969. And I had been part of the German relief organization of the Order of Malta, which is called Malteser Hilfsdienst. And so I knew how to organize help. And then I said, we must do something to really and truly help the people in our area. And I did not want to make the same mistake, which is always said to be the mistake of development work or even of mission work. And that means to take people from the so-called first world into the third world. And they are there for a few months and they are supposed to sort it all out. And after a few months or years, they leave. And then the whole thing breaks down because the local people haven't taken ownership of the program. And therefore, I said, what we must do is I must found an indigenous, a genuinely South African organization. And so I founded this organization. I'm the only foreign passport holder in the organization there. And all the others are South African. In the meantime, we are close to 2,500 members in that organization.
It's very wide-reaching as well.
It is. Sometimes I say jokingly, unfortunately, we have a very good reputation and therefore they bring patients from far away to us.
It's an area where HIV/AIDS is very much a problem.
It is.
So you have a clinic, you have a hospice, you have a creche, a nursery, you have an education service, you have an ambulance, you have funds for helping young people to study, you have emergency funding for people who are in need of immediate aid. What have I forgotten there?
You're very well informed. No, you haven't really forgotten any important thing. Maybe the one thing is our children's home, which actually was a consequence of our hospice. I mean, everybody knows what a hospice is. It's a house where you do palliative care, where you look after dying people. And if mommy dies and the child is left over and there is no family member to take in the child, you can't just put the child on the road and say, go. You are not our responsibility. The children are. And therefore, we started a children's home. And in the children's home, we have mostly abandoned children, but we also have AIDS orphans. We have children who are infected with HIV/AIDS and who are, of course, on treatment for it, because from the hospice we run a large AIDS treatment program, and that has become our big, big, big activity.
So you managed to bring antiviral drugs to many of these people. How
does that
is work?
Correct. Well, the antiretroviral drugs, they work in a way that they are able to prevent the HIV virus to replicate, which means to duplicate or multiplicate in the human blood.
Your patients come to you. I mean, it's a vast area.
That's right.
It's a very poor area.
Yes.
Are you well known in the area? Do people come to you or do you
yes.
have to go?
Yes. We are extremely well known in the area and people come. And if they can't come, they call us and we go out into the bush with one of our ambulances and we fetch the people then and bring them in. I mean, if there is home care possible, we do home care and we have a large home care program as well. But where home care is not an option, I mean, if you are far away in the hill country of Zululand and if you have to walk 10 kilometers down the valley to get drinking water, and if you have an AIDS patient in the last stages of AIDS and they are vomiting and they have diarrhea and their bed linen has to be washed 3 times a day, you can't actually do home care anymore. And this is what our inpatient unit of our hospice is all about. And as I said, in this hospice, we started the AIDS treatment program, and people come. We actually have even a problem now, because on the 1st of January of last year, we had 440 patients in AIDS treatment. And by now, 1.5 years later, we have nearly 1,000 patients already. So in 1 year, the number, or in 1.5 years, the number has doubled. But the other 440 have built up in 9 years' time. So we are actually exploding with patients at the moment. But unfortunately, the big problem is that the finance is not exploding concurrently. In the contrary, we have a problem because the American funding, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief in Africa, abbreviated to PEPFAR, is coming to an end. The South African Catholic Bishops Conference was supported for close to 10 years by PEPFAR, and the PEPFAR funding is coming to an end in June next year. We got an extension. In actual fact, since May it should have stopped, but because we have such a good reputation and such a good track record, we got an extension by 1 year, but from next year on we have to finance our program mostly ourselves. Thank God, the Bishops' Conference spoke to the South African government, and they spoke to the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Health and to the National Department of Health. And in many parts of the country, the government AIDS treatment programs have taken over the patients of the Catholic institutions. I mean, the AIDS treatment program of the Catholic Bishops' Conference had by November last year 40,000 people initiated on antiretroviral treatment. Most of them have been transferred to government programs, but in our area, the government clinic is so overwhelmed with patients, they could not take over our patients, so we have no choice but to carry on.
But would you say the rate of infection is increasing? The HIV rate of infection, or are you just becoming more and more of a point of reference for people who have AIDS? Why have the numbers exploded so much in your
I think area? The latter is correct, which means that people have finally overcome the stigma, their fear to have an HIV test. Because what we are using is those peer counselors. That means patients who are on treatment and who are very well, and they go out into their communities and they say, don't be stupid, have yourself tested, and if you're HIV positive, then you get the treatment and you can be as happy and healthy as I am. And this really breaks the ice. And so this is one thing. And the other thing why we have got so many patients is unfortunately or fortunately, as you may see it, our good reputation, our good track record, because we have a very high success rate. And our high success rate is founded in two things. The one is that we properly prepare our patients for the treatment. We have a 3 weeks preparation course, and in that preparation course, the patients are told exactly what HIV infection is all about, what happens in the body, what the medication does, why it is so important to take the medication, what to do if a possible adverse drug effect is occurring. And the second big thing is that we have what we call therapeutic counselors, and that means that every patient who is on treatment gets home visits by those therapeutic counselors, and they make sure they take their medication. We call it adherence counseling. And if there's any problem, then you can intervene at an early stage, and so people don't default, which means they don't stop taking their medication, which is the big problem in programs which are not putting such an emphasis on preparing the patients and on this treatment counseling. And therefore, we have a very good reputation and many people come to us. And I'm beating my own drum. It is also the kind of friendliness they see in our area or in our house, and which they don't get by those totally overcrowded government facilities. And therefore, we have so many patients.
You were saying that the government is, in fact, stepping in where PEPFAR is leaving in some areas. Has the government taken your situation to heart in any way? Is there a prospect of them contributing?
Yeah, what's actually happening is that right now, at the moment, We get funding from the government, but not funding in a financial way. But at the moment, the government is paying for 37% of our treatment cost by giving us the antiretroviral drugs. And they also will give us the medication for the so-called opportunistic infections, which means all those million infections which take place, which take the chance that the body can't defend itself through the through being immunocompromised. And for that treatment and for the AIDS treatment, we get those drugs in the meantime by the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Health. And from the 1st of July, they also have promised to take over our laboratory, meaning that we can now send our bloods to the government laboratory and get results from them. And the Bishops' Conference has, as I told you, extended their help, which makes a total of 24% of our cost for this year. But from next year on, we have to pay for more than 50% of the total cost. To say it in plain English, we have to finance round about 150,000 euros per year additionally in until June 2014. And from June 2014, it's round about 300,000 euros, which we have to finance from our side to supplement what is necessary to run the program.
That's why you're here today, isn't it?
That's right. This is why I'm in Europe again, to beg. And I always say jokingly, we Benedictines are actually not a mendicant order, a begging order, if you may call it like that, but I have become a beggar. But I do it because it's about saving lives. It's not about providing a service and being proud of one's statistics. It is about saving lives. And I tell you honestly, we have around about 1,000 patients on AIDS treatment now. And if they don't get the drugs, they die. And it's not only that I couldn't sleep anymore. I don't know how I would stand in front of God if I had to tell him, sorry, I didn't manage and so those people
so
died.
Whose doors are you knocking on?
Well, we are knocking at everybody's doors and at everybody's heart wherever we can get. And this is why I'm quite grateful that you invite me to speak to you so that I can speak to the listeners of Radio Vatican as well and say, please do help us in our plea.
Can the individual help as well?
Yes, of course.
How does it work? Do you have a bank account that people can donate money to? Or do
Yeah, that's correct. We have a bank account, of course. The easiest is if you go onto our website. And our website is www.b4bravo.org.za. May I repeat that? www.bbg.org.za. And there you will find a link to our different accounts in different countries and also for online donations through PayPal.
People don't realize maybe, you know, South Africa is seen as one of the BRICS. It's one of the growing countries. It's a bit of a beacon. It's seen as a bit of a beacon in Africa. But in fact, there are many, many very poor people. And from what I understand, yours is a rural area. There's probably
very
a lot of migrant workers.
Very much so.
So people get left by the breadwinners who go to the mines, who go to the harbours.
That's why we have a pre-primary school and creche to enable the mothers to earn money, because the husband's going to Johannesburg, to Cape Town, or wherever, coming home maybe once a year.
AIDS as well, I think,
that's correct,
the
and they infect their wives.
South Africa has a great side to it. There's a lot of potential. So
there is indeed.
They really deserve to be helped.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, thank you, Father Gerald. Is there anything else you'd like to? I'd actually like to quickly ask you about our new Pope Francis, who speaks of his preferential option for the poor again and again. Hopefully that's going to have an effect on all the poor people in the world. It's going to change the way we view them.
I actually think it already has an effect. I mean, you know, our new Pope is such a wonderful man that he wins the hearts of everybody over, even of people who are far from the church or even of enemies of the church who say, wow, what a wonderful man our new Pope is. And, you know, he is not just talking, he is putting into action. And the way how he approaches people, the way how he chooses residents, and the way how he deals with people, saying Holy Mass with Vatican employees of different sections each and every day. You know, he's such a grassroots man, and this is what we need. We need a grassroots approach. What did Jesus do? He didn't sit in his heavenly throne and wave down to the earth, but he came to the people and he went onto the grassroots level of the people and he saved them there. And this is what we need. And therefore, I actually think that it's a kind of a Pentecostal event in our entire church. Our new Pope, and I think it's not only the Pope, it's with him all the people who get more enthusiastic about the church again, that the church has resurrected in a way from a slumber and is getting new power and new energy and new enthusiasm, and this is what we need.
Do your parishioners in KwaZulu-Natal know who he is?
Well, they know who he is and they know how he looks like, because the night he was elected as Pope, I immediately printed out pictures from the internet and I put them up and showed people in the services, this is what our new Pope is all about. And of course, I told them what you hear from Radio Vatican and what you see from the internet. And they are quite enthusiastic about him. Especially also are we enthusiastic, is the first Pope from the Southern Hemisphere. He is our man kind of thing. And I mean, as you said before, this option for the poor, that is the big thing which we really and truly need. And that makes the church so more credible. And this is what we in our little work in South Africa are doing. I mean, you might be aware that it's round about, if I'm properly informed, 5% of the total population of South Africa are Catholics. But the Catholic Church ran the largest AIDS care program after the government in the country. So people say the Catholics, they don't just talk, the Catholics act, and that makes quite an impression on everybody.